Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything in the center relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. We have a very interesting show. So let's talk a little bit about this problem. If you're retired or about to retire, you may have already seen some of this. If you're focused on economics, you probably know some of this. But when we look at the American retirement system, it's been designed many, many decades ago. And it no longer meets the majority of retirees. Now, a long time ago, it thrived on three stool points. One was a pension, Social Security, and then somebody's personal savings. Well, you know, that really doesn't work anymore because the whole landscape has shifted, and it started back in 2000 or even earlier when private pensions pretty much went away. I mean, in fact, Microsoft pensions went away in 2008. Social Security is facing insolvency. We keep seeing it 10, 12 years out. Okay, people are living longer, which wasn't expected by Social Security. Health care costs continue to rise. It results, many retirees face an agonizing choice between buying essentials and affording prescription medication. So Martin Bailey and Ben Harris are the authors of the book, The Retirement Challenge. We're lucky to have Ben here. But Martin and Ben, they're respected economists with extensive experience in both academia and government. Martin Bailey is a senior fellow emeritus at the Brookings Institute, serves as chairman of the Economic Council Advisors to President Clinton. Ben Harris is a former economic advisor to President Joe Biden, currently holds the position of Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy. So we have some very highly educated, very smart people here to talk to us about it today. Ben's going to be discussing with us the problems, the solutions, and most importantly, what you can do about it. So Ben, hey, welcome to the show. We're really glad you're here.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be on your show and talking about what's a very important issue for the American people.
So let's just get right into it. No big things here. How has Americans' current retirement system affected individuals and the economy? So let's start right there.
Big question. I think it's important to maybe start with a few notes on what it means to have an adequate retirement system. And so people have lots of different ways to define what's adequate. The way the economists tend to look at adequacy of retirement is basically, can you maintain the standard of living that you enjoyed throughout your working lives in retirement? So are we seeing people who were maybe solidly middle class in retirement, but then they kind of start to live on the cusp of poverty in retirement? That would be an example of a failed retirement system, right? So you should be able to live in retirement roughly the same standard of living that you live throughout your working lives. That's success from a retirement perspective. We have various ways of measuring whether or not it actually is meeting those goals. So one way is to look at, how people's consumption patterns vary right before retirement to right after. people then tend to do pretty good on that metric. A second is to look at people's finances earlier on in their lives and then say, look, if you continue on this path, how are you going to be in retirement? The Boston College Center for Retirement Research puts out what's called the National Retirement Risk Index, which does just that. It looks at people who are younger than 65 and says, are you on track to be in good shape? There's actually good news there. So they came out with a new annual measurement the other day and found that 39% of people were at risk, which means that the majority of people, 61%, are not at risk. And that's actually quite a big improvement than it was from 3 years ago. And we actually saw, you know, going back to the mid-2000s, up to 50% of people are at risk. So we're doing better. We're doing slightly better. That's largely due to actually gains in house prices, which create a lot of wealth for American families and a red hot stock market. So overall, I think if you want to characterize a retirement system, getting back to your original question, it's one that works okay for a lot of people and falls short for some others. And but the other big thing, you asked about how it affected the economy. As a country, we spend enormous resources devoted to retirement. We spend over 10% of GDP, largely through the federal government, devoted towards retirement programs. And that's only going to grow with the aging of the population. So it's a massive investment in retirement. And, you know, it's really one of our biggest national priorities.
So when you say the federal governments, are we talking about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all those type of things?
Yeah. And so the way that I look at it is you've got Social Security, which doesn't go exclusively for retirement. Sometimes it goes for people with disabilities or for children of people who were disabled. But most of it goes towards old age spending. Virtually all of Medicare goes for retirees, and about a third of Medicaid also goes for retirees, largely for nursing homes and older care for people with long-term disabilities. But we also have, on top of all of that spending, we also have around $250 billion every year in tax incentives for contributing to retirement accounts. So you add this all up and you're getting over 10% of GDP devoted to retirement.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure our listeners understood what that really meant.
So, yeah. So it's a good question.
So keep going on there. I love this.
Well, you know, and I'll say, I think that maybe sort of going to some of the challenges to the current system. The current system, the one thing to really note about changes in the system is what you mentioned from the outset, which is we went from a system where everyone had Social Security and a share of very, you know, fortunate workers had these defined benefit pensions where you're getting a monthly check that's based on some combination of how long you're at the company for, what your final wage was. And you knew you were getting this monthly check, you know, until you died, basically. And sometimes your spouse would also get a check if your spouse happened to outlive you. Now, that's completely changed. I mean, virtually now, some people are still getting their defined benefit checks, but almost no one is. And really very few workers today are getting that. What people are getting are these what we call defined contribution accounts. This is like a 401k account where you own everything in your account. You've got a balance. And it's not necessarily good and it's not necessarily bad. It's just different. And the ways that it's different is there's a lot more onus put on the individual worker. It's up to you to make the contributions. It's up to you to manage the investments. And it's up to you to manage how you spend down this account over time. The real central problem with American retirement, there are a lot of problems, but I think the biggest problem is that it is not well suited to address the biggest risk in retirement, which is unknown longevity. We have no idea how long we're going to live. I don't know how long I'm going to live. My parents, who are in their late 70s, we don't know how long they're going to live. And it's a really tough question, right? So if you're planning to live at 65, to work until age 65, there's a decent chance that you're going to die in the next 10 years. There's also a pretty good chance you're going to live to your 90s. And like, how do you account for that outstanding risk? It's a really tough question. I say risk in terms of not knowing how long you're going to live. And so what do people do? Well, a lot of people don't have the finances to save and they just rely on Social Security. And they'll get their Social Security check every month. They'll get their Medicare benefits. And that's kind of it. But a lot of people have small nest eggs and a lot of people also have big nest eggs. But what they have to do is they have to oversave to account for the fact that they don't know how long they're going to live for. it would be much easier to save if you could tell me the year I was going to die, because then I've got my nest egg and I know how to allocate it each year. But I really have no idea. So I have to save a ton of money to account for unknown longevity risk. And then I kind of have to hoard it in retirement. So what you see with a lot of retirees, and I talked to personal advisors who confirm this, which is a lot of people are reluctant to spend down this hard-earned money in retirement because they are scared about being old and poor, or they're scared about needing long-term care and they don't want to rely on their kids. So that's the biggest problem, which is the current system does a lot of things right. It generates a lot of wealth for people, but it doesn't handle the fact we just don't know how long we're going to live and we don't know what our healthcare expenses will be.
Yep. And healthcare expenses are getting larger and larger in each and every year as people get older and the system gets more expensive. And then you add in a little bit of risk because we've had a wonderful stock market, you know, but that doesn't always hold true. So those things fall in as well. And then you have inflation. I mean, quite frankly, people expenses are up by more than 20% over the last 3 years. And that's just inflation.
Yeah. So,
and that's not going to go down.
So it's interesting that you bring up inflation, because I think one of the good things about the current system is that it does protect older workers or retirees against inflation better than people under 65. Social Security is indexed to inflation. If prices go up, Social Security goes up by the same amount. Medicare in practice is indexed to medical inflation. Your benefits are not going to change. So I agree with you. There is risk on inflation and a whole host of other metrics. But actually, people aged older than 65 are a little better protected against inflation than those younger than 65.
Let's take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with some more Saving with Steve and Ben Harris here.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I want to truly thank you for tuning in and appreciate you for letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at www.savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Now, let's get back here with some Ben Harris, and let's talk about this American Retirement Challenge. Now, let's start talking about some of the solutions to correcting this problem, and how do policymakers, employers, and individuals fit into supporting whatever reforms that are being proposed. And you know what? I think that's really, really important, because a lot of times, you know what, policymakers have different agendas, as you well know, living in that world. Or actually working with that world. So help us understand, you know what the solution is, what policymakers need to do, and how everyday individuals can get involved.
Yeah. So. The reason that Martin and I wrote this book was because we wanted a practical, plausible book, a framework that policymakers could use when they're starting to think about retirement security. So within Washington, D.C., you've got a lot of big thinkers, and a lot of times people come in and look at the retirement system and say, let's just blow up the whole thing. You know, let's just get rid of 401ks and everyone has a mandated pension. Look, without saying that's a good idea or a bad idea, it's just not going to happen. We're not going to blow up our retirement system. We have $30 trillion in wealth invested in the retirement system. Social Security, Medicare, incredibly popular. Blowing it up is just not going to happen. And honestly, I don't think it should. So what we wanted to come in with was a set of reforms which were tractable and realistic for policymakers. And I will say in broad strokes, we have two different sets of reforms. that we suggest. The first looks at how people accumulate funds for retirement. And right now we have a system where it's fairly upside down. I mentioned earlier that there's about $250 billion in tax incentives for retirement saving every year. I think that's a good thing. It helps generate wealth. It is costly in terms of, maybe crowding out other government programs. But on the whole, I think that's really a good thing. The problem is it's not really targeted towards the type of people who you would want it to be targeted to. So we know about 70% of that $250 billion goes to the wealthiest one-fifth of people. And that's because, A, they have the money to go ahead and save. But B, they're also working at employers that have these type of retirement plans. But also, it's based on your tax rate. So the more taxes you pay, the more valuable it is to contribute a dollar to a particular account. Not to say that upper-income people shouldn't get access to retirement saving incentives, but it really, if you design the system from scratch, you wouldn't have 70% going to the top fifth. So we say, let's just tweak the system. Let's keep 401ks, but make the saving incentives a little more valuable for people in the middle, for middle-class people. That's the first set of reforms. Along with that also, let's make it a little easier to contribute to your workforce saving plan. So right now, a lot of places have this opt-in. You have to actually go and sign up. That may not sound like a big hurdle, but it actually is for a lot of people. It's confusing, it's complicated, and a lot of people just go with inertia, which is the easiest thing to do, which is not sign up for the account. We should have the default be, you have to actively say, look, I don't want to save for retirement, rather than the default being not saving at all. And those two tweaks to the system, automatic enrollment and slightly more generous benefits for middle income savers, would mean the world to people when it comes to saving up their nest egg.
I see. I actually agree with that, because one of the biggest issues is getting started saving. Now, is there any incentives for the employers to match? I know there's not a whole ton of them match anymore. But is there any incentives that, in your book, or is there incentives for, would you recommend incentives for employers on a tax basis to encourage a larger match?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, my view is that employers really deserve credit for being good partners in this. I mean, employers are the ones who have set up these retirement savings accounts. They don't have to. They do it as a recruiting tool, and they do it because they care about their workers. And they've been trusted partners in this. And so I think they deserve credit. And so one of the things that Martin and I suggest are tax credits for employers who want to go ahead and set up these accounts. You know, those who aren't currently offering them, particularly small businesses, you know, some of their costs or most of their costs of setting up the account should be paid for. And, you know, that will just create, you know, very little frictions, very little obstacles to actually setting up these accounts in the first place.
Okay. So now let's talk about everyday individuals. How do they get involved with this? What can they do? Do they need to start pushing with their employers and legislatures? What would be the way to have that work?
Yeah. So I think, earlier I said the first big problem was around the accumulation side of things. The second big problem is around the decumulation, which is a fancy economics term for just how you're spending down your nest egg. Mm-hmm. Right now, we don't really have good insurance markets for people who want to spend down their nest egg. And by that, I mean, we don't have good markets for private sector products where maybe you get to, you know, age 65 and you've got $100,000, $200,000, maybe $1 million in wealth. We don't have great ways for people to translate all that wealth that they've spent 40 or 50 years building up into retirement security. So we don't have very good markets for annuities. You know, annuities are kind of the classic product for dealing with that longevity risk we talked about at the beginning. A second product, which is underutilized and has kind of a screwed up market, are reverse mortgages. So reverse mortgages are definitely not for everyone. But if you're a person who gets to age 65 or age 70, and you've got a $500,000 house that you've mostly paid off, but only have, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 in a 401k, we wouldn't consider that person poor. They've got $500,000 in wealth. It's just tied up in the house. So reverse mortgages are good products for helping people access that wealth and having a little more income for retirement. And then also long-term care. I mean, long-term care is a big problem in this country. The markets are just completely backwards. And ultimately, it has driven up prices for receiving that care. So we need better markets there. So what can people do? I mean, the first thing I think that people can do is, you know, always become involved in the policymaking process. Contact your representatives and say, look, I want a better system for retirement. I want more generous tax credits for when I save, and I want better insurance markets for when I want to go ahead and actually create some security in retirement. But a second thing that people can do, I think, has to do around, you know, education and information, even with your own networks. A lot of times people don't listen to people like me sitting here in my think tank. At the Brookings Institution, or, you know, when I was assistant treasury secretary, people listen to their friends, they listen to their family, and they listen to their neighbors. And so being a source of really high quality, accurate information isn't just good for you, it's good for your social network as well.
Oh, I agree. I listen to the right person. we've all heard the stories from the neighbors and how they made millions of dollars, but yet they still don't have anything. So it's, I agree with you. You need to listen to the right people. So, hey, Ben, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Where can our listeners go and read The Retirement Challenge? How can they go about getting your book?
So you can find it on Amazon. The publisher is Oxford University Press, Barnes & Noble, any major booksellers. You can go ahead and find it there.
Perfect. I appreciate that very much. I appreciate you being on the show today. This was a very, I'm not going to say interesting topic, but it's a topic that's needed. I think there's, you know what, when things are going well, great. The system seems a lot better. But when we have a couple years like we had in 2000, 2001, 2002, where you have a market that declined for 3 years straight, and then a few years after we had 2008, it was probably looking at a different picture. So, you know, those pictures are going to change. And those numbers you talked about, having people not be at risk of retirement, that's going to ebb and flow. But it's important that everybody start focusing on their retirement. And I think this is wonderful what you're doing, and I appreciate that. And I again appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. This is great.
Hey, you have a wonderful day. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time on Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I want to just start talking about the Magnificent Seven, okay? And if you haven't heard of the Magnificent Seven, they used to be the Magnificent 10 back 10 years ago, where these 10 companies were responsible for about 9% of the S&P 500's growth. Okay. Now, then we started focusing on the Magnificent Seven. And however, the concern today is there's only really four companies out of the seven that are carrying the weight, which means the growth in the S&P, and those are Amazon, Microsoft, Meta, and NVIDIA. They account for 69% of the S&P's gains. Think about that. Four stocks, 69%. What's happening is it went from 10 to 7 to 4, so there's a shrinking number of stocks. Leading averages higher. Let's take a trip back to memory lane and look at what happened in the year 2001, when the tech bubble burst. Yes, there are a lot of these companies that were doing really, really well, and all of a sudden, boom, they stopped. Pretty soon, we're going to have a final two. And then comes March Madness. Yes, we're in March. Folks, the question here for this is, the money that you have set aside to create that income that's obligated to you to support and maintain your lifestyle, your purpose-driven money. The money that has an obligation, should it be subject to growth stocks that could lose value? What would happen if those growth stocks lose value and your whole portfolio is focused on growth and not creating an income for yourself? You're not protecting that income. Well, hey, if your dividends aren't enough, then you have to liquidate, cannibalize stock to support your income, which means you're reducing your portfolio. Or you have to say, hey, we're going to have to wait and pause our lifestyle to get back to where we are. So, folks, this is powerful. And you know what? A lot of people aren't talking about this, and it will affect your lifestyle. So it's really important that you look at your money in the aware of performance money. This is the money that doesn't have an obligation. That, you know what, when you look at the market, you see it always goes up and to the right. That's great. But the volatility side of it is there. So, for example, in 2000, I mean, for the last 24 months, okay, your purpose, your performance money, hey, if you didn't take any money, it got to even. And you know what? It might even go higher down the road. And this is the money that's okay if there's economic viruses, because you know what? Given time, God willing, you'll live through the virus and your money will go back up. That's your performance money. The purpose money is the money that you're using to support and maintain your lifestyle, the money you need now. And the reality is time is not the ally of purpose money, because you need it now. Because if it's not there, you either have to cannibalize other things and or suspend your lifestyle. So it's important that you take a look at what's going on in your life and your finances as your purpose money and performance money, and just make sure that purpose money is protected. With that, hey, I want to thank you for being with us here on Saving with Steve. We had the American Challenge author, Ben Harris, here. Outstanding. He and Martin put together a wonderful book called The American Challenge, and it's talking about reforming the retirement system so everybody has that income that they had when they were working to support and sustain their lifestyle as long as they do. So that's it with me. This is Steve Saxton with Saving with Steve. And with that, have a wonderful weekend. Look forward to seeing you next time right here on Saving with Steve. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.